Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to a special episode of the Teach4X Network broadcast. Teach4X is an on-demand educator development service focused on the four pillars of education, which are technology, curriculum, community, and leadership. We are three high school social studies educators with over 25 years of experience combined. I am Scott Feiereisen, and with us, as always, catching up on some current events, Jessica Warace.
Hello.
And Eric Johnson. How are you guys doing today?
I'm excellent, man. Although spring break has gone too fast. I'm struggling with that, but otherwise I'm excellent.
Yeah, enjoying my spring break. Definitely enjoying it.
Sounds like it. Well, we have some special guests, our wonderful colleagues, a great teacher, and a personal golf buddy, which, you know, goes a long way. That means a lot in the world today. So Scott Sutherland is with us today. How are you doing, Mr. Sutherland?
Hello, Mr. Feiereisen. It is a pleasure to be here on the Teach4X network with Mr. Johnson and Ms. Rache and Ms. Mendez.
Well, welcome, welcome. And Jasmine Mendez, the bright shining star of the social studies department. Welcome to our get together tonight.
Thank you.
So recently, Eric, you, Mr. Sutherland, and Jasmine pulled off a pretty great history fair freshman project with their students. And we kind of wanted to pick your brains regarding it and see how that came about, what you went through, and how we could maybe try something similar or spread the good news and how to get other people to enhance their practice in a similar way.
So when Johnson texted the group chat and told us about the Freshman History Fair, I was so intrigued. So I have this question for Johnson to kind of like expand on what was the Freshman History Fair and like what inspired you to do something like this?
So we wanted to change up our teaching practices. You know, Scott and I have been teaching together and collaborating for about 100 years at this point. And so I think we were both finding that a lot of the stuff that we used to do wasn't landing the way it used to. And we've been feeling really energized by having great new teachers like Jasmine in the department that don't have as much of the old man energy as we do. So we were kind of looking to shake things up a little bit. And my goal was to start making every single thing we do in our classes feel like it has a purpose. I felt the first half of the year, everything I was doing just felt like meandering and pointless. I don't know. I wouldn't call it bad teaching, but I just felt like I wasn't working towards everything. And so my hope was that in this big unit that we were working together on race and power and hierarchy, there'd be some like conclusion. We'd be working towards something. And I think we all sort of started talking about this idea of some kind of history fair and having the kids feel like they're working towards some presentation of history topics to their classmates. And so then there'd be this sense of accountability where whatever we do, and I don't even know if we exactly knew how it would turn out at the beginning, but whatever the kids are learning and whatever we're going to do is all working towards something that other people are going to see. And, you know, we were originally sort of shooting for the stars. We wanted like parents and stuff to show up, and then we kind of ratchet it down to reality. But that was the goal, is that we would do something that would have this feeling of reality to it for the students. So we ended up putting on a history fair where all of our classes presented history fair style projects on race and power and hierarchy to their classmates, to our classes, to other classes, to upperclassmen, to teachers. And it became like a whole big thing. Did I miss anything, Jasmine and Scott? Does that sum it up?
I think that does. I think that does a fair job of it. I think when you were saying that it's not like we were doing bad teaching first semester, but things needed to be shaken up. And I, you know, that was the right way to go. I think the project created a lot more buy-in in a part of the year that we call the dip, where kids primarily stopped doing anything. And the project, I think, like if the goal was to create more engagement because it was an inquiry project, like I think, you know, mission accomplished. And also the history fair component of it kind of put a little peer pressure in a positive way into the program, in that I had kids that I hadn't seen in weeks show up with posters that hadn't done any of the work leading up to the poster, but they wanted to make sure that their poster was seen. So there's that component should be considered.
I think we are entering a part of the school year where students who may not have been aware of the politics of schools are becoming very aware of the politics of education, the politics of school very quickly. And in a way for them to remotivate themselves to engage in not only curriculum, but also to entrusting adults in the building. This was a great way of like not only opening themselves up in a very vulnerable position to share their learning, but also in a way where we can go and value the work that they're creating, as opposed to like seeing them as, are you following rules? Are you not? More so where like, you did an amazing project. Now I want to hear from you for you to teach me something.
I cannot emphasize enough how helpful it is for fogies like me and Mr. Sutherland to have new teachers that are inspired. You know, it's easy for us to face a lot of inertia as educators after we've been doing it as long as we have. And so just like Jess, when you joined our department, and now Jasmine, as you join our department, you know, having somebody that still has their soul left in their body, that that can be super helpful in terms of motivating good teaching practice.
Scott, one thing I was curious about was kind of how did the three of you at very different points in your career and very different styles in teaching and leadership styles, or even not even considering themselves, you know, being curriculum leaders, how did you end up teaming up on something like this?
Like Eric was saying, we've been planning teaching together from the get-go, you know, an eon ago, it seems like. And so like, you know, that's kind of standard operating procedure. And Ms. Mendez, you know, being new this year, probably was hearing about all the all-star ideas that me and Mr. Johnson were having, and just wanted to jump out of our coattails. And now I kid, I don't think that's true. I think that as me and Johnson are planning, you know, we're getting new ideas and new energy from Ms. Mendez. And I think she kind of maybe could, you know, benefit a bit from what we already know. And it's a kind of a happy fusion that happened organically. Wasn't really a thing that we were planning on. And, you know, when the idea came up, I think we just all kind of went with it, and also realizing that it would be a good thing to shake things up in the classrooms.
I agree. I mean, I think there's something really important to finding a little group of teachers, especially within larger teams, like the teams at our school, that you can work closely together with. And I think, you know, just like FIRE, you and I used to plan together and like, you know, sort of try to set some curricular agenda where it's just two people or just three people. I think you can really get a lot done with that small group.
Yeah, Johnson, how long did it take you and the team to prep this before you even rolled it out into your classroom?
I think we came in hot. I don't know. We spent a lot of time fantasizing about it and sort of talking about it in broad strokes. And then it was suddenly time to do it. And I think we sort of jotted down a very rough outline, scope and sequence, I think in one of our course team meetings. And then we just started making it happen. You know, the nice thing is this project was all inquiry based. So the idea was, we didn't want to get too committed to any details in case we needed to change stuff to respond to student needs. So we laid it out roughly with the idea that we could be flexible. And there were some moments I feel like we had to be flexible as we went through the project and had kids, you know, develop research questions, do the research, make the poster, figure out how to present it. So there was something to that idea where we almost don't want to plan too much because we want to be able to make changes as we go.
And that's kind of like how we go about our planning too. But just kind of reflective of how you and I have been planning for a while. We put together a skeleton, and then we kind of fill it in as we go to an extent to allow for flexibility, and, you know, to change things on the fly, to adjust them where we need. And that works for us. And I think we're pretty comfortable with that. And I think that was the way to do this too. I don't think you could go into something, a new project like this. Obviously, and it's the first time we did it, we're not going to have all the parts in place. So I think that style of doing it was the right way to go.
Yeah, me and Scott are the king of figuring out a week or two worth of curriculum in 10 minutes before our first class. And then again, Jasmine swooped in this time around and was like, hey, listen, like, I made this cool Canva poster to send to parents explaining the project. And we're going to like help, you know, explain to parents why we're doing the project, what the project is. So when we ask for the posters, when we ask kids to buy posters, the families know what the purpose of this is. And again, these are things that hadn't even occurred to me, you know, so that was really valuable to have that insight and then start trying to get some of that community engagement in this process as well.
So anybody could answer this. This is just something that I always think about, and Scott, you mentioned it, that, you know, this was a great idea and then other people got on board. Something that I always battle just in my position, and I think particularly at the school that we work at, is that there's a lot great ideas. There's like an infinite number of great ideas. The problem is getting those to actually be done and follow through. So just on that execution piece, you know, something is, I don't want to say basic, but a kind of a standard procedure would be to have, you know, some type of a history fair project. That's like a standard thing that happens in school. That's good. So how was that executed? Like, how was the follow through and how, you know, how did that get you to that point where you had this cool idea and then it actually happened?
A couple of things are happening. We were sort of spinning our wheels for a semester. We were like kind of losing traction. And as the year's going on and going forward, you're going to kind of like, kids are going to start to tune out, and we're looking for some kind of way to re-engage after Christmas break. And for me, also kind of one part, just being more comfortable and feeling more free in what I'm doing at school. A little bit of a, not really, I don't want to be flip about it, but like caring less about dictates that are coming from on high and just doing what we thought was right for once. And those two things kind of naturally came together. Like it seemed like it would be a good thing for the kids. And also, why not? Let's just try this. And let's just, you know, if we don't just rip off the Band-Aid and jump in and do it, we'll find reasons not to do it. And I'd seen that happen a bunch of times before, like you were saying. So we just kind of went for it. I think like all the stars aligned kind of thing.
Jasmine, what do you think as a younger teacher, a newer teacher taking on or just being a part of a project like this? Because it's something that's pretty special and pretty great and that you were a part of. So I don't know if you knew that or not. It probably wouldn't happen without you. So how did you get this to happen?
I think I take a very different approach than Johnson and Sutherland. I was freaking out, quite honestly, the week before we had to start working on posters. Because
they were too. They were too. Don't worry. That's all right.
Yeah. I mean, I saw some of them freaking out. So I don't know where this confidence is coming from, but it was very nerve-wracking to like not necessarily know if all the students were going to get posters. And then also like some of our kids didn't finish the organizer, but they were about to start working on posters. So it was very nerve-wracking. But I think what made it come into fruition was the fact that we had such a very strong team, because we did get a lot of pushback from different levels. And so because we kept getting those pushback, it made the objective more daunting and it made it scarier, because it's like, if we fail, then we had more to lose than if we did well. And I think that's what we're realizing now is like, or what I'm realizing now is, you know, we get so little credit for it being done so well as it was. But had we gone wrong or had it gone worse, we wouldn't have stopped hearing about it. And so part of this is like, we have such a strong team that we were able to rely back on each other when something was going awry, or when certain teachers backed out, or when our original plan wasn't able to go like fully through. Like, we were able to sit with each other and just be like, you know what? No matter what, we do have each other for support. We have our classes and our students who can observe each other if no one else wants to observe us. And so, like, I feel like the team itself was what kind of was my anchor to prevent me from being like, you know what, this is just a first year teacher thing. I'm just, you know, talking my stuff. Let me not do this project and do what everyone else is doing. So I am very grateful for my team. And if it wasn't for my team, I wouldn't have even tried to do this. So, yeah.
I'm going to start crying, man.
I don't know. I think we should mention that, like, that maybe not the entire team is here. Glaucio had a lot to say and do with the beginning of the project. He kind of fell off with it towards the end, but I think he'd be into it next year. And also we got an assist on the QFT from a colleague of ours in the department.
I would say our colleagues definitely stepped up to support us. You know, everybody was, as we were struggling, I was feeling like a community theater director getting nervous, and it's like days until showtime. And so I was, especially like the posters and having the posters done, that was my greatest fear. I was so scared we were going to invite all these people over and the kids were going to have nothing prepared. And like kids will do, I think they kind of pulled it together at the last second. You know, I think none of us were confident that it was going to come off as well as it did at the last second.
So one thing I'm hearing that I've been feeling and reminding myself in these difficult times is the power of keeping your eye on the ball. You really have to remember what you're doing and why you're doing it, and that it's, you have to believe that it's worth it and know that it's worth it, because even something as like a history fair, all of a sudden, did you fill out the right form? did you reserve the space? What about this? Did you think about this? And it's like, let's stay focused on what we're going to do this thing, and it's going to be good, and it'll be better next year.
Yeah.
Though while you guys were all talking, the one word that kept popping into my head was trust. This idea of trust in your students, trusting that they will pull it together at the last minute, which I have had that kind of happen to me as well, where I've kind of feared like, oh, they're not going to be able to do this. And then at the last minute, you know, you have enough trust in them that you're like, well, whatever, it's not that serious. We're going to do it. We're going to figure it out. We're going to see what they produce, right? And also, I think what I heard a lot from what you all were saying is just trusting yourself as an educator, right? And it's something that, because we have so many people day in and day out questioning our educator moves, questioning our experience, questioning what we think is correct or the correct way of teaching, sometimes we lose that trust within ourselves. But then things like this history fair, the things that were produced, you know, the conversations that you heard your kids, it is with... It's like building the trust back in with yourself, because I know I feel that sometimes too. I'm like, am I really that good at this? I don't know. But then this happens and it's like, oh yeah, I'm kind of good at this. And I should trust myself more often, you know? And I think that's something that should be highlighted with this history fair, is this idea that you have given your students this trusting hand. Like, I expect this of you and I'm going to trust that you'll do it, but also trusting yourself and saying, I think this is correct and this is what I want to do and this is going to, how it's going to happen. And I think that that's something that we're losing a lot in education. So when you were telling us about this, Johnson, I was like, oh my God, this is so cute. This is so great. Because it is.
Yeah, it came out cute. And I did, I used fear as well. I told my students, I said, do not embarrass me. You are representing me and my teaching. Do not embarrass me. So
love it. Mexican mom techniques.
Yes. Well, I can't use that. That's I think I would get fired.
Yeah. I also trademarked it already. So you can't legally use it either. So just not out there. So one of the things, so I've never done a history fair, but I was really into inquiry when I was working at the department. You know, one of my big push as like the course team lead was to kind of like start doing inquiry stuff. And that's something that I had developed. But one of the things that I found most difficult when I was doing inquiry, that I kind of want to know what your experience has been with this history fair, is how did you guide like students' questioning techniques through this project? Because the climate's different. And a lot of the times what we see, what I've seen, even within myself, you know, like the rise of social media, like ChatGPT, which is a question I have for later. But with all of these things, you know, I think we're losing students' questioning abilities. So I kind of was curious as to what you guys did with that. Like, how did you guide students into making their big history fair questions? And how did you teach them what an open-ended question is? And how do you make it historically relevant and all that jazz? What'd y'all do?
I mean, we had a great organizer. I personally will admit to towards the end, just telling kids their questions. You know, we got them pretty far. You know, we set up the tee for the tee ball. And then towards the end, as we were getting down the wire, you know, some kids, I feel like, did a good job coming up with questions. And then other kids, you know, I was just like, OK, your question now is, could universal basic income work in the United States? You're researching it. Go. I don't know if Jasmine and Scott, you did the same thing, but towards the end there, I did end up kind of just giving kids some questions.
Yeah, I did that a bit. Yeah, you had to an extent. They don't know, in some cases, just enough about things to even know what to ask. And that's, I think, about like the open and closed questions part too. That was the cool thing about getting an assist with the QFT. If I could throw in some more acronyms, that'd be great. I need a decodering with all the teacher acronyms, but that was a pretty good jumping off point, the QFT, and something that I'm looking forward to doing more of in the future.
Yeah, I did several rounds, and I mean several rounds with QFT, of just like giving them images, giving them quotes, giving them sentences and situations, and they just had to like routinely do QFT. And so the final round of QFT, they had to QFT quotes from Power, Race, and Hierarchy that Johnson had shared with me. And then once we had that, I was like, okay, remember, because I scaffolded it so that we had a soapbox speech project before we had the actual inquiry project, because I wanted to understand, you know, everyone around me is telling me that there's something that I am missing that will be the reason that my students are going to fail. And so how can I stop that? By doing a scaffold project where I can see what those gaps are that I, as a first year teacher, am not looking at. And so I did that project. And when I did that project, I was like, okay, you now have this QFT questions based off of these three terms. Now what I'm going to have you do is take your soapbox speech topic and just insert it into one of these questions, whichever one you feel most passionate about. And for the most part, it worked. where a lot of my students were able to just insert their topic into the QFT questions. But for the students that struggled more, which was more likely my shelter classes, I was just like, okay, you have this topic. What are you trying to do about it? And then they would tell me, and I'm like, okay, what question do you need to ask to understand how you can get there? And then that would be their question. And so it's finding different strategies to their understanding to help them formulate that question.
I think that also, just real quickly, that the unit itself was like a really good, I don't know, fodder. It was the good unit to do something like this in. It provided a lot of, I don't know, mental ammunition.
And we structured the entire unit to feed into the kids developing their research questions. We started with a few weeks of content on race and power and hierarchy. We had the kids do their soapbox speeches on topics they were passionate about. So we were kind of over a course of many weeks funneling kids into their questions, even if by the end, maybe they needed a little bit extra help.
How long, Jasmine, did it actually take for students to prepare their actual projects, like making the thing?
So the filling out and doing the research, because we did the soapbox speeches, they were in a very strong place to then leap into the project itself. So the filling out of the document and the finding the sources, the OPCVLE, the sources, and then answering the evidence-based question only took them like maybe a week. My students that needed additional help, maybe a week and a half. And then for the rest of the students, I think it took them maybe, some kids did it overnight and they ended up really well, but for the most part, a week to do the poster. So I would say maybe a total of the actual project would be like 2 weeks, but with the additional scaffold, it was like 3 or 4. So it was a rather long unit.
I think the whole thing was like 10 weeks in total, like basically a quarter.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah. But, you know, first time through, that's going to happen.
That is true.
We can tighten it up next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were a lot of kids that I think got a lot out of the project as well. So it was worth all that time.
It was cool to see pride too. Just a little pride in the work there. It was like, oh, that's refreshing. That's that, you know, brought it out of them. That's kind of cool.
So Jasmine, bilingual queen, from one queen to another, how did your class of Spanish speakers handle this? Because I did something similar with my Spanish speakers. I did like a baby inquiry project with them last year and it turned out really well. So I'm really excited to see what your experience was with the Spanish speakers.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing was like, where did they find the articles? And they were choosing such complex topics that I didn't even think about. And it was just, they have these huge topics that are very related to where they're from, the experiences that they had. And so it was kind of like, I was that kind of guide of like, here's the articles that you can help you. Like, yes, your experiences are valid, but you do need articles because that was part of the skill component. And so it was just doing that. The problem that I ran into very quickly that I didn't realize I was going to run into just because of my own ignorance was that they demanded, and rightfully so, they demanded an audience that would respect their work as much as they did. And I will be honest, I dropped the ball. The first day that I invited a class in, they disrespected their project. They weren't listening to them and they felt it. And so in that moment, for them to work so hard and their posters were hand painted, you know, their research was well thought out. Like it was amazing to see. And so for me to drop that ball the first day, I felt so guilty. And so that's when I had to reorient and be like, okay, this is the standard that they are asking me for. And I have to meet that standard because they met mine. And so how am I not going to meet theirs? And so it was beautiful to see. It was amazing to see them take such ownership of their work, especially in a space where they don't necessarily always feel like they have ownership over. And that's a conversation that we've had throughout the year of like, hey, like you are entitled to an education just as much as everyone here. You're also entitled to respect as much as everyone else's. And so to see them finally step into that and to demand respect and to show their learning. And I had students that were like, Ms. Mendez, can I like show this to every single class? And I'm like, I would love you to. However, we need to find a way to be able to do that in a respectful way. And so it was beautiful to see them kind of blossom into this like both advocacy, but also like pride of their work and who they are in this space.
The pride thing was huge. And to be honest, Ms. Mendez, your Spanish speakers were the best posters, I think. I walked in that class. I mean, the one kid had the computer in front of their poster displaying a video. Although Sutherland had some interactive ones, I think Mendez, your Spanish speakers, I mean, I got kind of teary when I walked in. Those were really incredible.
I love that. I love that you were able to give them that space because I think that's really important, especially when they feel like they are like they're Spanish speakers, they're newcomers. A lot of the time that's what they fall into and they don't feel like they belong. But I feel like this project did give them that opportunity and that's awesome and just warms my little bilingual heart.
I was just going to say warms the heart thing, because it did do that. I was kind of picturing myself as the Grinch, where his heart grows because, you know, his heart grew two sizes that day or whatever it is. I'm not exactly Grinchy, but I can get a little bit negative sometimes. And that it was weird to feel positive and hopeful for once. And kind of adds fuel to the fire. I'm kind of excited for what we got next, man. You know, I think that'll be cool.
Yeah, well, what are you going to change for next year? What are you thinking for next year?
The main thing I do want to change is try to intersperse the content and the project itself. You know, we preloaded all the content and then did the project. And then that left me, and I don't know if Scott and Jasmine, you felt the same, but I was in a situation where I would have liked to have given more individual feedback throughout the project. And towards the end, it was like, you know, we're on the luge going down the hill and we're just free flying. And I there's not a spot for me to course correct some of the students. So, you know, I was watching from afar as some of the freshmen engaged in some misinformation on their projects, but it was like, we're in too deep. 60% of your poster doesn't make sense. You did it in black marker and you're showing it tomorrow. Like, I can't. So I would have liked more spots through the process to correct that. You know, there was a few moments where I'm like, I'm glad this is ninth graders talking to ninth graders here, because some of it was like, that's a little, but that's all. I just want more time to give individual feedback.
What do you think, Jasmine? Yeah, I'm saying next year, Jasmine. I'm already roping you in. You're already in for next year.
I agree. I would have done this a lot sooner. I would have engaged them in this kind of learning style a lot sooner, because I think this has been exactly what we have been saying, is that our students are more than capable of doing this type of stuff, but we're not asking them to do this type of stuff because we were too scared. And so I think doing it sooner kind of helps us create those scaffolds that are necessary to make this a lot smoother of a process. And I also say, like, the results of the OPCVLs are like, the math itself is mathing, in that our students, or my students at least, their OPCVL scores skyrocketed, as opposed to like where we were last quarter, where I was like frantically like trying to reteach as much as possible. And so I think we found a way to streamline the skills that can happen a lot sooner to help our students out, as opposed to kind of, you know, beating a dead horse in that we're teaching skills in a way that isn't very intuitive to who they are or how they learn. And so I would like to do it sooner. I think the other thing I would like is like more space for feedback, but more space for like celebration, because I was like hosting, I couldn't necessarily stop and like help my kids or like celebrate them, because I was just constantly running around frantically, and Johnson saw me just like trying to like mitigate as little, like every single problem, putting out as many fires as possible. And so I would like a space for celebration where we can sit down and we can have this conversation of celebration with like all the students, as opposed to me like the last day, the last 5 minutes being like, we finished, I'm proud of you guys, and then they're like on their phones already, so it wasn't much celebration. So I would appreciate that
closure piece is important, but sometimes really tough to pack in. What about you, Sutherland? What are you changing?
I think you kind of hit on it. It felt like about two-thirds of the way through that we were getting a little unmoored away from you know, the obviously the inquiry questions were based in the unit, but then they would go down their rabbit hole of a question and sometimes lose sight of the unit itself. And you know, like, you know, don't forget to relate this back to race, power, and hierarchy, I had to say more than a few times.
Yeah.
So I think interspersing some more content throughout the process would be the better way to go.
Agree.
So like I mentioned earlier, like I think that one of the things that we see a lot is this like misinformation piece, and especially with this whole ChatGPT launch and how students have been using it in their projects. Do you feel like the ChatGPT and like AI, was that an issue that you guys saw in during this project, during this fair?
A little, yeah, a little. And I didn't handle it well. And in the few cases, I just was like, hey, this isn't your work, you know, please redo this. When really, I think we should have found some way to like leverage it to help the kids on their projects. But yeah, there was a lot of students' work. Again, this is where getting chances to give feedback throughout would have been more helpful, because there were moments where I was like CSI Miami analyzing their stuff, like trying to decide, like, did this kid like go nuts and took a lot of ownership and it's like really good because we inspired them by doing an inquiry project, or did they pull up ChatGPT? And so there were some definitely fuzzy moments, and there were a few posters at the end, the kids standing next to their poster that's like totally not their work. And it put me in a complicated position where I'm like, okay, like, you know, we ended up going so fast towards the end that I didn't catch this, you know, how will I handle this in terms of assessment? So it got a little bit complicated near the end, definitely.
Well, as we start to wrap things up, just in closure, hearing from so many great educators just on taking on something of this magnitude, how did it really make you feel? We've been hearing about that all night, but I'm always fascinated at how sometimes when we pull back, we feel that we kind of retreat to the safe space. We think we're doing what we should be doing, but like that's not actually, we kind of need to push forward and take those risks. So, you know, where are you guys at now going through something like this? And what surprised you going through something like this?
I kept finding that it was having some unforeseen positive ripple effects throughout the classrooms, throughout the classes, throughout the not only the quality of the work, the projects themselves, but then like the classroom discussions that we're having, you know, in between little bits of project, were getting better. The buy-in was created. I was always a little bit dubious about inquiry creating buy-in, but it worked. It really did work. And you know, that in turn created a bit of pride in what they were doing, which was also so pleasant to see. And that in turn, you know, made me more enthusiastic about it and more open to these things because of those unforeseen positive ripple effects.
Well, it's awesome. I always think about ripple effects being negative. That's good to have a positive.
Yeah, how about that?
I was thinking about unforeseen negatives.
I feel like I got the bend mentally there. I'm not normally that positive.
It was all about seeing the students take pride in their work for me. You know, it was so cute seeing kids scamper on with their posters to pick them up and drop them off. After the first day of presenting, a lot of kids were like, Mr. Johnson, could I take my poster home? I want to add some stuff, because they were seeing how their other students were doing, you know. And so every time I saw a kid scampering down the hall with their poster, I felt a greater sense of just community and pride. And like, I think we have a lot of challenges because our school is huge. And so sometimes that feeling of community gets lost because it's so big. But seeing a kid with a poster, if I didn't recognize them, I know it's Scott's or Jasmine's, and they're off to go work on their project. Like, I felt more connected in having colleagues come by and see this stuff and talk to me about it, and seeing how the different students reflect their teachers and the personalities of their teachers, and like all these little cogs coming together and seeing the gears of the school turn. I don't know. I just felt pride. I felt the students' pride. I felt this sense of community, and I took a few pictures. I don't like taking pictures in class too much. I think it's a little weird, but I took some pictures to send to the boss to put it in the newsletter. And I caught myself. I kept just thumbing through the pictures of the kids presenting and sharing their posters, because it just made me so happy. I got the guy. He's holding a permanent marker. He's pointing to a crowd of students with stuff on his poster. It's a great poster. There's one big goofy typo on it, but he's like teaching the heck out of it, you know? And yeah, I felt a lot of pride and community.
It kind of reminded you why, you know, like one of the reasons you might have gotten in this in the first place, you know, the edifying part. Well, yeah, it can be edifying.
I thought it was for summer break, but.
Well, that too.
I feel like this project was something that was very scary nonetheless, but at the end of the day, it was very fun. It was very informative. And it, like I said before, like exactly how Sutherland said, it was like our heart grew like 3 inches that when we saw those presentations happen, and you saw those kids just take so much ownership over this project, where it's like we didn't have to like pull teeth to get their posters. They wanted to get their posters done. They went the extra, like we had the most basic format for what a poster could look like, and the kids were like, that's ugly, and they made their own, and it was astounding what they came up with. And so it was just so heartwarming to just see the end result. It was amazing. It was great.
I love that. And I think it was definitely, like, if I was there, I probably would have cried, because I'm a huge crybaby. But I also think that this idea of the communication that we're seeing gets lost so very easily. Like, Jasmine, how you said earlier, like, the last 5 minutes of class, they're already on their phones. But the fact that you guys even opened up a space for them to socialize and, like, speak to one another about their projects, like, that's just the coolest part. Because I would do stuff like this, like, write inquiry stuff, but, like, mine was still more that traditional, like, oh, well, present it. Get in front of the class and present it. But this just made it so much more interactive. And that's so cool. I'm so happy for you guys.
And thanks for letting us talk about it today.
Yeah. So huge thanks to our guests, Scott Sutherland and Jasmine Mendez, for hanging out with us today and telling us all about the Freshman History Fair. Please subscribe to Teach for X on YouTube and rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you would like to get in touch, you can ask us a question via Spotify or email us at teach4xcontact@gmail.com. You can also find us everywhere on the web and support us by purchasing our courses on Teachable. Visit www.teach4x.com for all this and more.